We are recording. Check that out.
How about that?
Okay, cool. I'm seeing your waveform. I'm seeing my waveform.
No going back now.
It's all happening.
That's a fitting way to start the podcast about acting in movies and storytelling.
Quote a little Cameron Crowe for us.
A little movie we both like, one that shockingly we've both seen.
Well, yeah, there's that. Okay, so our music plays. Do-do-do-do. And then I say, I'm Sean O'Banion.
And I'm Shannon Mullen, and this is Character.
Conversation about actors, their craft.
And some of their unforgettable roles in the movies we love.
For our first season, we won't announce them yet, but we have some really fascinating guests. Whether people even know their names, they may not, but I know that everyone knows their roles and knows their characters.
And that's it right there. You just nailed it. If I was going to define what's the theme for the type of actor that we want to have on the show, it's that. Ones whose performance almost overwhelms their off-screen self.
All of the people that we're going to talk to, they kind of vanish. And some of these people have been leads, but if you go watch a Tom Cruise movie, if you go watch a Kevin Costner movie, if you watch a Michelle Pfeiffer movie, there is a thing where your brain is like, you know, they never quite disappear, most of them. Christian Bale, Gary Oldman, to an extent, Meryl Streep. They kind of change something about their look. Nicole Kidman's done it with changing noses and things like that. But, you know, most of the time when a studio pays a lot of money for a movie, they're like, we're putting your face on the poster. You don't get to disappear. You are the reason that people are buying tickets, or that's the theory, right? But a lot of the people that we're going to talk to, particularly when they haven't been the lead, they are able to vanish
Yeah, they're gone in the character.
and live in this other skin. And somehow you buy it, and you know, from movie to movie sometimes, or show to show, you're like, is that the same person?
And how do they do it?
The ability to so completely change oneself. They're not the same human being.
And yet they are, it is the same human being. And that's the connection that I'm super interested in asking about. Is what is the connection between the same human being inside of that body and playing such radically different characters so seamlessly?
Yeah.
You might not know their name because they disappear into these roles, but when you see their face on the screen, you just know that the movie or the show, it's just going to be a little bit better because they're in it and you're like, you're excited.
Yeah.
If that is, if you recognize them.
Yeah, there are certain people where merely by their presence in a project, it's a mark of quality.
Yep.
You immediately, like, the movie just what's the phrase?
Jumps a
Like
level.
the movie just leveled up.
Yep.
As soon as you see them, you're like, the character is going to be something interesting, even if it's only a few minutes of screen time. It'll be a full human that you're watching.
What is it about their humanity, their existence, their life experience made them into a person who had a sharper, better, broader something, view, understanding, perspective of the range of humanity that they're able to perceive it, study it, store it all away in the library of self and bring it back? I mean, I can't wait to get into that with these people and get them to, you know, maybe I'm wrong about that. Maybe they don't even know the answer. And maybe that's what makes them so good at it. I can't wait to find out.
One of the best quotes I ever read about acting was, acting is not about putting on masks. It's about taking off the mask you already wear. We all wear these masks, but actors have to be willing to stand there and take the masks off and be vulnerable and goofy or,
Flawed, imperfect.
yeah, flawed. And all of these people bring that element of like, I'm fully invested in watching them take those masks off.
We should probably tell them a little bit about who we are.
Let's tell him.
You go first because I love hearing your story,
Okay.
how you got into the business.
So I was born and raised in LA, and I grew up very close to basically all of the studios for most of my youth. But in particular, when I would live with my father, my mom and dad divorced when I was tiny. I lived about two blocks away from Universal. Didn't really have any sense of filmmaking, or, you know, when I lived with my mom, I'd get 1 hour of TV a day, I think. You know, it was like Scooby-Doo and Four in the Afternoon or whatever.
Scooby-Doo.
But my dad was showing me vastly inappropriate films at a very young age, whether it was, you know, The Godfather or whatever. I mean, the horse in the bed just terrified me. And so I was aware that like these were, that this is a thing, like there are these entertaining things that you watch. It didn't connect with me that that was a job you could do until 82. So in 81, I saw Raiders of the Lost Ark, and that movie changed my life. It terrified me and excited me. Right in the beginning, in the opening scenes, when the skeletons pop out, I went over the armrest into my grandmother's lap, because my grandmother also took me to wildly inappropriate movies. And then the following year, Spielberg did E.T. And at the end of E.T., I was sobbing because I didn't want E.T. to leave. And I wanted to be Elliot, and I wanted to, you know, have an alien. and the title card came up, directed by Steven Spielberg. And I immediately went, he's the guy that did the movie last year. That was totally different and scared the shit out of me. And all of a sudden it was like, I want to do that job. I want to know what that job is. And I want to know how you get the job. So because my father lived next to Universal, I had read an article about Steven, about how he at 16 years old had gotten a porcelain cup of coffee and walked past security like he belonged, and they let him in. So I did the same thing. I'm an 11-year-old with a cup of coffee. And I walked into the lot. And then I did it again. It was in junior high, and they were filming Quantum Leap, which was at the time one of my favorite shows.
Mine too.
I wish somebody had taken a photograph of it, because I got to eat lunch sitting on an apple box. The only people in an empty soundstage were me, Dean Stockwell, and Scott Bakula.
Wait, you have to explain why nobody kicked you out. Like, how did you?
Because I'm sure it's very different now, but at the time, people's assumption is you must belong there, because otherwise how the hell would you be there? I did eventually get taken to security and told that I was trespassing, and they took a picture of me. Like, I remember they took a Polaroid and they stuck it up on the wall and they said,
wait, were there other ones on the wall? Were you like on a board with the
that I don't, and like in my mind it was like a Kaiser Soze Usual Suspects, a wall full of, like, you know. But no, so I knew that film was going to be my life. I kind of was a screw up for a long time. Like, you know, I didn't take it seriously. Then when I did take it seriously, then I started getting hired and staffed and working on jobs. And I did, you know, a great many movies. Ultimately, I moved into working for actors, people like Courtney Cox and Ben Stiller and Christopher Walken. It was an amazing insight into their process, into how they fit into the larger process. And I did end up working for a few directors, though not as many as actors that I worked for, and had an opportunity to produce an independent film. And I was able to take all of that collective knowledge, both from the sort of logistical and also the creative side, and funnel it into making this first movie. So that was sort of the path of discovery.
Which will lead eventually to how you and I met.
Why don't you tell us about your background and how you ended up here talking to everyone?
Well, this is my wheelhouse, spoken word. I was a reporter for national programs on public radio before I got into the movie business, ostensibly as a producer with my very first feature project, which I ended up writing myself, and was accused at that point of masquerading as a producer when I was really a screenwriter. So I guess you could say I'm now a writer-producer, and I'm still a journalist, so all three things. But the first movie that really just knocked me over was Titanic. And I know there are a lot of people who roll their eyes about that, but I was, you know, 17-year-old girl living in New Hampshire, and I remember coming out of that movie theater, and it was cold, and I was devastated and totally emotionally just overcome. And my dad goes, "So who wants Chinese food?" And I was still in the world of the movie, you know, like,
were you like, that bitch, there was room on that piece of wood?
Not at all. It wasn't that. It was more emotional. I just wanted to stay in the place that I was. And to this day, I love to go to movies by myself, because when I come out of a movie like that, I don't want anybody talking to me or telling me what they thought of it. So that's how I felt after Titanic. And I think I went to see it 6, maybe 7 more times in the theater. And that's a long movie. So that's a lot of time. And at that point,
21 hours of screen time.
Yeah, I don't want to think about it that way. But I remember studying it. I mean, like, one time that I watched it, I was just looking at the costumes next time I was looking at, you know, the sets. And I was, I guess I was just started figuring like, oh, so this is a thing that people made. And the only person in my life who had ever been in this business for as a job, as a profession, was my like black sheep uncle. He had told me to, you know, if you want to do it, you have to move to LA. It'll probably take you years to get anywhere, if you ever get anywhere. And I didn't, I think that scared me away from it, because the only person in the family who treated it like a real job told me it was something I wasn't going to be able to do for a long time, if ever. You know, but I just, it just stayed with me, and I kept, it kept bugging me all through college. And I went into, it's a long story, but I went into journalism after that. And I remember interviewing a woman who had been a nun, and she was kicked out of her convent. Long story short, she was too funny. She was too much of a storyteller, and she left. And she started a program in Hollywood for Christians to teach them to tell better stories. So I did this story about her program, and she told me after that, after I turned off the tape, we talked for a while about the business, and I said, for a long time, I'd been kind of flirting with Hollywood and maybe going and doing something in Hollywood. And she said, you know, if you ever decide you want to do that, hang on to my contact information and give me a call. And when I got back from driving around the country with my then boyfriend, I gave her a call. And she said, okay, there's a kid. He's coming home to Boston. He's really talented. He's going to make this movie. And I wrote to him and I told him my story. I said, I work for NPR and I've always wanted to be in the movies, and I would do any job on his set for free. And he goes, great, you're going to be a second assistant director. and he tells me, I got to talk to this guy, Sean O'Bannon.
And then they get on the phone with you and you're like, yeah, I've never been on a set in my life. And I'm like, that's nice. I mean, ultimately, it turned into now more than a decade long friendship. And now we have this new interesting venture.
And with that, we're off. So why do you want to do a podcast?
The podcast for me is about my love of film and recently television. More recent. I mean, I guess I grew up with TV, but I certainly didn't watch as much as I do now. I think the quality has just improved so much that it's become a part of my regular life. But I think a lot of our guests are going to end up being people whose work I grew up with and whose work made an impact on me in one way or another. And mostly, I'm just a fan of film and television. So to me, talking to these people is going to be sort of like reaching into my past and going, wow, remember that movie I saw 35 years ago? I'm going to talk to the guy who's in that movie or the woman. And to me, that's the coolest thing of it.
I think the coolest thing of it is getting to do something without anybody's permission, first of all. And the medium of spoken word, I think what's helped podcasting become what it is and where it's going is the intimacy. It's literally in your ears. And I think that's really powerful. Something actually that cinema doesn't have. And having just been steeping myself for the last 4 years in screenwriting, writing for the screen, to really focus again on storytelling that's just going to be in people's ears, it's sort of refreshing. So that's partly my way. And the other part of it is that I'm really curious. I mean, I did some theater acting when I was a kid, all the way through high school, and I took one acting course in college, but I'm by no means a professional, and I steer well clear of the camera in my journalism career. I don't ever want to do it and be in front of a camera like these people do. So to have the kind of passion that I have for writing these stories, they have that kind of passion for embodying all these extraordinary characters. And I want to know who those people are, how that informs their performance, and whether my hypothesis that there is some connection, poke them about that, get them to talk about that.
It's interesting because you just said two things that one I hadn't literally thought about until this moment. But as a kid, I would take a tape recorder, and when a movie was on TV or, you know, later when HBO came into existence, I would tape record the movie so that when I was on the bus in the morning going to school, I would put on headphones and I would listen to Beverly Hills Cop or listen to The Goonies, like an old Orson Welles audio play. I just thought of that, and it spoke to what you were saying. The other thing is, I wouldn't call myself an actor, but I have acted in things, including some of the movies that I've produced. And so I understand, in some sense, the pressure that comes with that, particularly in the case of an indie film, when there's not a lot of time and, you know, you're also a producer, you're like watching the clock and you're like, I got to get through the scene, you know, and I did like Upright Citizens Brigade in LA, so I could sort of work on improv and comic timing, things like that. And I've always done impressions and things, but just to talk to actors about the alchemy, you and I know already from developing things, the alchemy that is involved in creating a movie in any form is already a miracle. All of those things. I mean, that I just want to talk about that journey as well.
So there's also someone really special we want to tell you about who inspired us to do this in large part.
Yeah.
Our late friend, Drago Samanja.
Yeah. So Drago was an actor who I initially met as a performer. I wrote and directed a short film, and somebody had said, you know, that thing that you're about to go shoot, there's a guy who would be really good for that role. Came in for an audition and he just killed it. Yeah, I mean, he was like Gary Oldman. He was intense and he was perfect and he was kind of different looking. And he was this tall, lanky, you know, skinny guy who just, I mean, he looked like it already the moment he walked in. And then I was like, please be a good performer. Please be a good actor. And as soon as he read the lines, I was like, okay, we're done. He's the guy. Drago went on 2 years after we shot my short film to produce, direct a documentary called Character, in which he got the opportunity to follow around people like Dabney Coleman, Peter Falk, Harry Dean Stanton, and Sidney Pollack, and basically older statesmen, legendary Hollywood actors and filmmakers. It was a very impressive film. And over the years, he and I had a lot of conversations about maybe continuing that story because the film was only men, you know, could you pivot and do it with all women? And in, what was it, 2017, he co-wrote a film called Lucky, which ended up having Harry Dean Stanton in the lead role and basically a who's who of phenomenal actors in all of these other roles.
Incredibly special little movie about life and the end of life in particular.
Yeah. And so shortly thereafter, I get a call from Shannon and she's raving about this movie called Lucky.
So you put me in touch with Drago. And at the time I was really fighting both the process of screenwriting and myself, a lot of imposter syndrome. And Drago had nothing to gain from it. But we had a couple of conversations and he just listened, you know, and he read some of my stuff and he told me he thought I had some talent and he believed in me. And he sent me a copy of Character, but he also sent me an old-fashioned mixtape. It was on a CD, but it was a mixtape of songs that that I could listen to if I got down in the cold winter mountains where I was working. And I did. Anytime I started to question myself, I put that on. And then I met him in LA and we talked, and he was the kind of person, like, I didn't have the experience of casting him, but I remember when he walked into that bar to meet me, perfect gentleman. And just, it's so rare that you sit down with someone new, you know, and we talked on the phone, but, and you just, you're not self-conscious. They're incredibly warm. The conversation is authentic. I know everybody's going to know what I mean. It's so precious and so rare. And he just sat down next to me like he'd been in my life my whole life. I wasn't like, oh, here's this guy that made this movie I loved. It was just Drago. You know, we talked after that. We were going to maybe try to find something to work together, the three of us. And then we got the email that he was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. And we lost him, you know, not long after that. So our show is inspired by Drago's work, not just on his documentary Character, but his work as a writer and actor that the world really lost out on even seeing the beginning of.
Yeah.
So it's inspired by him and dedicated to his memory.
We are super excited to get to this season. A couple days before our first episode premieres, we will announce the first guest.
Delayed gratification. How old-fashioned.
You'll have to subscribe and wait and see who we're going to talk to next.
But we do promise this is going to be really good. So on that note, welcome to Character.
The show is produced by us. Shannon edits our episodes, and we have technical support from sound wizard Tim Skoke.
Our stunning original score was composed by Academy Award winner Dario Marianelli.
If you enjoy the show, put in a good word wherever you get your podcasts, and track us down on Twitter, @podcharacter, for future updates. Most importantly, thanks for listening.